We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
But we're there. We've been there now. You know, we vie for national championships. We have the best coaches in America. We're here because of the kids. We have the best student athletes. I would have never stayed here if it wasn't for the family that's here, both from the kids to the coaches to the administration. I mean, it's the best school in America.
After 4 decades of service as both a coach and administrator at Duke University, Jackie Seiler will retire from her position as Senior Associate Director of Athletics at the end of June. Since her arrival at Duke in 1979, Jackie has served as an assistant women's basketball coach, spent 15 seasons as the head field hockey coach, then later went on to have an administrative role with 24 head coaches. Jackie is also the lone senior woman administrator in Duke Athletics history. Today on the show, Jackie and I talk about her transition from coaching to administration, how the athletic department has evolved in the 41 years she's been at Duke, plus advice she has for future student athletes, coaches, and administrators. From Duke Athletics, I'm Rebecca Fiorentino.
This is Blue Devil 360, the official podcast of Duke Athletics.
Well, Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time to come on our podcast today. 41 years in Duke Athletics. But what a time we are in now, huh?
Yes, this is a very challenging and interesting time. A time that I would have never, ever imagined in my career or in my life.
You've spent 4 decades at Duke as both a coach and an administrator. First of all, can you believe it? But second of all, when you first stepped foot on campus in 1979 and someone would have told you you would have spent 41 years at Duke, what would you have told them?
No way. No way. There's no way I would. I can't imagine it. I mean, I don't feel like I am 68 years old. I, you know, My body tells me I am, but certainly my mind doesn't. And I still think I can do everything I used to do when I stepped foot on campus in 1979. So it's been a fabulous 41 years.
Has this time maybe given you time to reflect on the 41 years that you were there and to take a step back to look at all that you've been able to accomplish at Duke?
Yes and no. I will tell you, this time during the pandemic, these last 3 months, I have probably spent more time in the months of March, April, and May working, and June, Zooming phone calls, because typically this time of year I'm traveling with teams. And I'm not nonstop working, trying to come up with answers that we don't know. And I've said, I don't know, more times than I care to tell you in the last 3 months, to my coaches, to student athletes, to peers. I mean, because we don't know. So, but I've had time to reflect the last week because I went into my office because I figured this would be, I wouldn't ever be going back to my office. So I went into my office to start packing up and, you know, discarding some things, passing some things on to other folks. And so what should have only taken me maybe a day to pack up, I'm still going back because I'm reading all my files that and all the things I've collected over this time frame. And it's been fun. To reflect back on, oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, golly. That was our budget back in 81. We only got $5,000, you know? So, it's been fun to reflect. Definitely.
Well, a lot has definitely changed from when you first stepped foot on campus in 1979. How different has women's athletics changed from when you first were an assistant coach in 1979 for women's basketball, and then to what we've been able to do today in 2020?
How long do you have? Because it has changed so much, Rebecca. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, when I stepped foot on campus, Debbie Leonard, one of my college friends from High Point, she was the point guard on the basketball team, and I was the center. She had just gotten a job here at Duke as the first full-time women's coach. She was hired in, I think, 1977. And so Duke was a little bit behind the time with Title IX, et cetera, et cetera. Most of the coaches were from the physical education department. And so coming here, thanks to Debbie Leonard, to give me that opportunity, it was sort of surreal in the fact that I was making more money teaching in the public school than I was at a university as an assistant coach. But Duke continued to put the resources into the women's programs. It took them a while to get it going. That's why our programs are still, I think, playing catch up. For many years, they were still playing catch up into the 90s because we weren't that school that everybody would want to go to. It took a while to get our name into recruits' heads that we have a great program. We have a great university, the best education you could ever want. It's a combination of excellence, both in the classroom and on the court, on the lake, in the pool, wherever. And, but we're there. We've been there now. You know, we vie for national championships. We have the best coaches in America. And we're here because of the kids. We have the best student athletes. I would have never stayed here if it wasn't for the family that's here, both from the kids to the coaches, to the administration. I mean, it's the best school in America.
You make a great point. You've really seen how Duke has evolved from, you know, not having as many women's sports to now in 2020, having an incredible amount of opportunities for female student athletes to come and play and get the best education at Duke. But it had to take time and, you know, and resources. What was that transition like in having to be patient to how it has evolved to what it is now?
Yeah, patience. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the number one thing was, you know, you had to have patience because we didn't have the resources, you know, and it took time to add the sports, and then it took time to add the scholarships. I mean, when I took over coaching field hockey in 1981, they had one scholarship, and the school down the road, where I was an assistant coach when I was in graduate school there, everybody knows what road that is, 15501, you know, they already had their full complement of 12. So we were playing catch up. And so that had to be explained to the coaches you hire that, you know, it's not going to happen right away. We hired you because we know you can make it happen. And, you know, getting that one recruit in, that top recruit that can turn your program around, that's what you do. And that has happened since that time with all our programs, women's programs, as well as our men's programs. You know, obviously the men's programs, most of them have been around a lot longer. But you're right, I've seen the adding of women's soccer and women's lacrosse and softball and rowing and dropping gymnastics, because we did have gymnastics a long time ago. So it's been a journey, but it's been a successful journey. You know, you have to build a strong foundation. And if you have a strong foundation, then the house can go up. So, and then you can add all the furniture and everything else. And we're there.
So in 1979, you came on to be an assistant women's basketball coach. And then in 1981, like you mentioned, you were the first field hockey head coach. So you were doing two things at once, coaching both sides. You don't see that nowadays. What was it like back then to be able to, you know, have to balance both responsibilities?
Yeah. No, you do not see that anymore. Not in Division I anyway. I know it's in Division III and II probably, but it was, you know, coaching is teaching, and I'm an educator, and so it was my life. It's what I did, obviously, all the time. You know, field hockey, I coached in the afternoon, and in women's basketball, our window of practice was 8 to 10 at night. So
wow.
So we practiced during that time frame. Sometimes we got the 6 to 8 time slot. But so obviously you're able to do it, but not as well as you would like, obviously. It was a lot of time, but I enjoyed it. I was with because I was an assistant coach in women's basketball, that helped me be a better, I think, head coach, because I understood why kids didn't want to come and talk to me and were afraid of me because they wanted to go talk to the assistant coach. I'm like, but I am an assistant coach just in basketball. You should feel okay to talk to me. Never quite understood that, but I should reflect on, I was that way when I was in college as well. You know, you never want to talk to the head coach. You want to talk to the assistant coach. So, but it was what it was. I didn't really think anything about it. I'm the one who wanted to add that responsibility into my life. And it was just something that I did, and, you know, didn't think a lot of it, and just enjoyed every minute of it.
Growing up, did you always know that you wanted to coach?
growing up, I was a tomboy. You know, I had a younger brother and a father who put a basketball court in our backyard. And so I always knew I wanted to be involved in sports somehow. I grew up in the time when there weren't youth sports for girls. I used to hang out with this group of guys, and we'd get on our bicycles and we'd ride down to the ball field, and I'd sit and watch them have little league practice, baseball practice, because I couldn't play. So then we'd get back on our bikes and we'd ride back to the neighborhood, and then we'd play, and I'd beat them all the time. But you know, I couldn't play in that baseball league. So so I knew that I had this passion for it, and so I guess I did. I guess I always knew I wanted to be involved some way or another. And then by going to High Point, it was High Point College then, I had some fabulous professors, and Betty Jo Clary and Jackie Palmer, I was like, this would be very cool to be able to teach class and coach at a university. So I was lucky enough to be given that opportunity.
Well, you coached for a few years at Duke, and then you went into administration. How did you make that jump from a coach to an administrator?
So when I didn't have basketball onto my responsibility, and I was only coaching field hockey, the first year it was great. I mean, we went to NCAAs, went to regionals. It was great, you know, because when you focus on one thing, you can do it pretty well. The second year I was bored. I was like, there's something I'm missing in my life. And so I went to Tom Butters, who was then the AD. And I said, Tom, I said, could I like shadow you? Because I think I want to get into administration. And he said, no, I want you to be my senior woman person. And I said, what? He said, yes, they've been bugging me, the NCAA and the ACC, to name somebody. So why don't you do that? And I said, and coach? He said, yes. So I did coach, and then I was the administrator. So I did that for 2 years, that Tom allowed me to coach and be the administrator. And I said, okay. And I was so excited, Rebecca, because I wanted to provide for our coaches things that I wanted as a coach from the administration, because we were very thin. Tom Butters, Chris Kennedy, Joe Oliva. That's it. Chris had his thing, and Joe had the finance part, and Tom had his thing. And so I was like, I want all the coaches to get together. So I started the coaches roundtable and just started a variety of things that I thought I continued to want as a coach. And then Tom came to me and said, you got to make a choice, you know, make a choice, either keep coaching or do the administration. And at that time I was in my 40s, and I was like, you know, I'm really tired of driving vans and talking to you know, recruiting, you know, going on the road recruiting. I said, I think I'll go into the administrative part. So that's when I moved in full time into the administrative part. And it wasn't that bad, hard of a transition for me, because it was similar to responsibilities. It was leading, but leading not young 18 to 23 year olds, but leading your peers and supporting them and listening to them and communicating with them. And I had the advantage that I was a head coach. And so when a coach would come into my office and start saying something to me, I would say, don't bullshit a bullshitter. Because I was a coach. I know what you're talking about. And they would go, oh yeah, that's right. So I had that leg up on them. So
So you were the lone senior woman administrator in Duke Athletics history, holding the post since its inception in the 90s. What did holding that title mean to you?
Well, first, when Tom asked me to do that, I had to find out what it meant because he was just like, go write your own job description, just figure it out. And I did that. I reached out to some folks that were meeting in the athletic, in the ACC. The ACC SWAs would meet. And so they were some very nice women. And I said, what does all this mean? And I got some literature and I read about it. And I was like, wow, this is important. And in the 90s, it was very, very important because there weren't very many women that were in roles of leadership in athletic departments. So to me, I was like, this is fabulous. This is exactly what I want to do. But I didn't want it to be just that I only cared about the women, because I cared about the student athletes. And so when Tom said, you know, talk to Chris and you guys figure out what you're doing, for a couple of years, I just had all the women's sports. After a few years, I said, Chris, this doesn't feel right. I shouldn't just be looked at as, because I'm female, that I only care about female student athletes and female coaches that coach women's sports. So then we reshuffled the deck a little bit, and I had wrestling and track and men's tennis and then some women's sports as well, which made it feel more like what the role is about. It's about a giving the opportunity to a woman to help women advance in leadership roles in the athletic department, along with supervising sports or compliance or whatever your other roles are. It's a title. It's not a position. And so in the 90s and early 2000s, it is a very important role, because if you see now in Division I, even in the BCS, we have many women who are athletic directors. And I don't think we would have seen that had this, whoever put it into place from the NCAA, wouldn't have done that. I think we would still be, we wouldn't see as many women as leaders in athletic departments and in conferences. We have commissioners, many commissioners who are women. We have a lot more women now in Division III and II as athletic directors, but we have quite a few in Division I. So anyway, that's what it's meant to me.
So you had the experience as a coach, and then you came into administration. And like you said, the staff was small back then. So what's the biggest change you've seen in the athletic department in 2020, and how the athletic department as a whole has grown?
Grown.
Yeah.
That's so true. All right. So if anybody's listening to this, the media room off of the Cameron Indoor Stadium, very small space, but probably holds what, 30, 40 people, maybe?
Maybe.
Our whole staff. That's where we would have our staff meetings at the beginning of the year. Tom Butters would say something, and we would have little Durham sandwiches and soda. Chris Kennedy would say, no, Tom Butters would say a poem is what he would do.
A poem.
And off we would go, you know, and it was, everybody would fit into that room. Now we're 300 plus. It has grown immensely over the last, you know, 20 years. And rightly so, we've become very specialized. Our student athletes, when they play youth sports or AAU volleyball or basketball, they have a nutritionist. They have a strength and conditioning person. They have a trainer. They have all those things. So when they come to a university like Duke University, they expect those things. They expect to have the nutritionist, the sports psychologist, the behavioral health person, the media, the social media, all those things. So we had to grow with it. There was no reason not to. It will continue probably to grow. However, with this pandemic, we might see taking a few steps back.
I know, it's crazy. But even campus has grown, like from everyone working inside Cameron to now we have all these different buildings.
Yes.
Because we got so big that we had to build these buildings to house all the different employees. But your office, I'm sure, has changed as well.
Yes, it has. I was fortunate for a long time. Well, when I first came, Debbie Leonard's office, they converted a closet into an office for the first women's full-time coach. And in fact, we painted it. Nobody painted it. We painted it. And so when I came as her assistant coach, we were in that office together and then moved up to that front office off of the Cameron floor until they did the bump out. I was in that office space for quite a long time. I was fortunate enough to stay in that area for a long time until, you know, they did the renovations in Cameron and moved up to the third floor. So I've only moved around a few times, which I feel extremely fortunate because I know there's a lot of administrators that have moved around a lot more than I have. But it's my office that I had in Cameron, I loved and hated. Loved and hated. It was a love and hate affair because I was right as you come in the door off of the lobby. And people, when we had media guides, I'd have a table right there. It was just a little side table next to my love seat, and random people would walk down that hall, but they would, on the way back, they would see the media guide sitting there, and they just stick their head in my office and say, "Can I have that?" I'm like, "No, you can't have that. I don't even know who you are. Go down to the media room, you know, sports information, and see if they'll give you one." So it was a great office for sure.
You know, you've been at Duke for a while, and I'm sure you have some great, great stories of what it was like back then, you know, for people to understand really how small a department was and everything that you had to do. What's a story that sticks out to you where it's like, man, we've come a long way since then?
Well, that's a good question. There's so many things that stand out. So let me take a moment here. Probably to answer your question about how things have changed, many of us wore a lot of hats, okay? So when I was full-time administration, at one point I had a responsibility of all the women's sports as their sport admin, all the women's sports as their academic advisor, all the championship ACC and NCAA events that would be held at Duke. Okay, so now you see in the departments that we're going through. I know, isn't it crazy? But I didn't do them as well as everybody does it now. I mean, you couldn't. But, and I had one person that helped me. And I know I did something else too, but I can't remember. But I mean, so that just gives you an idea. I mean, we have how many people up in the academic area? 10, you know, look at Bob Wiseman's group, you know, for game ops and for championships, that's a whole new area. But I mean, but we didn't do it to the level they do it by any means. I mean, we didn't have somebody meeting the team at the bus and da 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 da. We were like, just, you know, here, drop them off wherever, because we couldn't be everywhere at one time. One time we were hosting, I'll never forget this, we were hosting women's basketball. It's when Gail Geston, of course, coached. It's probably in the 90s or early 2000s. And we hosted first and second rounds in Cameron. And Laurie Winters, Jack Winters' wife, was our sports information person. And basically, Laurie and I, and maybe a few other people, ran the championship. And I remember the NCAA lady, which, you know, as I served on that committee, now I understand why she said this to us. She was there as the NCAA liaison, and she had to evaluate Duke, which the evaluation was based on how well we did for the weekend, how we put out the sports information team sheets right away, how we were able to get the press conference going right afterwards, how the game flowed, et cetera, you know, from the one game to the next game. And she said to me and Laurie in our eval, that gave us the opportunity to host or not host for previous next few years. You need more people. You and Laurie, you just can't do everything. And because I got all my friends to volunteer, to take care of the band, to run the score table, to take care of this band, to do the player guest area. I mean, they were all volunteer people that we had to get. So we have those people now.
Now those are jobs.
They're jobs. So that, does that answer your question? They were good times, though. They were good times.
I can't imagine. Wow. Now, you've also been a part of some pretty incredible national championships as a sport administrator, you know, 7 with women's golf alone. Do you have a moment that's really gonna stick with you as you head off into retirement that you're like, wow, I was a part of that?
There's so many great moments. From when I coached to when I was an administrator, all of them I keep very close to my heart, and I love them all. To be able to single out one moment, I would not do justice to the rest. I mean, I think of all the men and women, because they're men and women now with families and their grandparents, that have come through my time at Duke, that I've either coached or been a part of as their sports administrator, or just knew them as, you know, when I ran SAC and all the student athlete development area. You know, I think just knowing them and watching where they were and where they are now, you know, that just puts a smile on my face, because I stay in touch with so many of them. I should say they stay in touch with me. So one moment, I can't give that moment to you.
I knew you wouldn't say that.
Too many, honey, too many. Too many good times.
Well, I know that you've always been about the student athlete during your career at Duke and the betterment of the student athlete. And I know with all the times I have come to you with needing advice, you always say, this is why we do what we do. It's for the student athlete. Why did this become somewhat of your life mission, if you will? And why is this something that was so important to you?
It's a good question. You know, when I think about a university, you know, you go to a university to get an education. And I always looked at Duke as a place that it was different than other universities or colleges, because we really, when we say the word student athlete, we really mean that. It's not athlete student, because it is about the education. It is about, I mean, what, what is it, like 2% of college student athletes get to go on and play professional. So you have to get an education. I mean, you don't have to, but my God, you're here. You might as well. So, I mean, it's always been, I'm an educator, you know, I'd like to teach. I like to help people learn and make them the best they can be. So that's why the student athletes are the reason why we were here. If they're not here, we're not here. That's for sure. I hate to say that because you don't know what's going to happen this season. So, but you know, I guess it comes from being the educator that I am, you know, because it's about the student. It's about the student and it's helping them grow, not just on the field or on the court, but in life, because college is the best 4 years of your life. I still get together. In fact, this fall, it'll be 50 years that I get together with some of my friends that I played ball with, either field hockey or basketball from High Point College. And and we've been getting together for about the last 30 years. And we've known each other 50 years and we have the best time and we laugh and we cry and we just have a great time. So I think helping student athletes understand and grow while they're here for 4 years is the most important thing that administrators and coaches can do.
So now what, Jackie, what does post-retirement look like for you? Spending more time with dogs, what's that like?
Well, my plan on July 1st is not to get on any Zoom calls. Is to get up when I want to, although we have a puppy. So, you know, this morning at 6:45, we were outside in the garden planting some things and just, you know, before the heat came in. It's going to be spending some time with my family. My mom is still living and lives in Florida. I have three siblings. I have nieces, a nephew, great nieces and nephews, and I have not spent as much time as I would like with them. They're all around. So family will be first as I retire. Some volunteer work with the dogs. We have two that are therapy dogs. I love when taking them to elementary schools. So they read with kids that have trouble with reading. We've done that for years. We've backed off a little bit, just not having the time. But I think I'm going to have some time to do that. Play a little pickleball. Love pickleball. Still going to play on my senior softball team that we won a gold medal last year out at Nationals.
Wow.
So, yeah. Stay active, get back in pretty good shape, and just enjoy right now. I'm still planning to teach at Duke my PE class, basketball, if everything works out with that, and still doing college advising for one more year. So stay involved as much as I can, but step back and not have to be scheduled constantly.
So, on Zoom.
On Zoom. As Kevin White calls it, Zoomarama. I love that term. So.
Well, Jackie, I know for me, you've always been someone that I have looked up to, and you've always been so open and welcoming. And I know I will certainly miss you, and so will so many other people, coaches, student athletes, other administrators. For those that are listening, I'm not going to get emotional, I promise.
Good.
I can't believe you're leaving me. But for those that are listening, what's the best piece of advice you'd like to leave them with?
How about two things? Follow your dreams. And if you don't have dreams, shame on you. Follow your dreams. And, well, three things. You know me, I have to come up with a couple others. Number one thing in my life has always been about integrity. If you make a mistake, own up to it. The world's not going to come to an end. But if you don't own up to it, that's your reputation. My last thing is, you need to communicate. You need to be a good listener. You need to hear people. And you also need to, if they want advice, then you can share. But communication starts first with being a good listener. And that's all the advice I have right now.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. I think this is really important for other, you know, female student athletes to listen to and kind of, you know, you're a pioneer and woman.
I am.
I feel like yourself as a pioneer.
I do. Absolutely. I do. I mean, I could tell so many stories about, I mean, yeah, because I've seen it all. I've seen it from grassroots to no, I mean, I played with no scholarships at my college. When we went to postseason at High Point College, we had to, at a men's basketball game, take out a sheet. Four of us held the corners. We walked at halftime in front of the stands so people could throw money into the sheet so we would have money to go to Kentucky to play in regionals that we, so our coach wouldn't have to pay for it all. Because that's who paid for it. She paid for it. The college didn't pay for it. So I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it all the way. It's time for somebody else to continue this journey.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for all that you've done for me and so many other student athletes and administrators. We appreciate your time coming on the podcast today, and I wish you the best in retirement.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and let us know which guest you'd like to hear on the show. From Duke Athletics, I'm Rebecca Fiorentino.
This is Blue Devil 360, the official podcast of Duke Athletics.